So, Razor, what are we speaking about this week, Razor?
What was it? Basically, more or less, we're speaking about like disfluencies and discourse marker things.
Not speaking fluently.
Exactly.
Welcome to Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. Hello, my name's Craig.
And my name's Reza.
And we welcome you to over 45 years of teaching experience that Reza and I have together. And we're going to improve your English and take it to the next level. How are you, Reza?
I'm very, very well, Craig. Although, like yourself, I'm recovering after a bad cough.
Toss. Yeah, me too. Yeah, it's the time for coughing because of the air conditioning and colds and coughs and changing in temperature. But I think we're over the worst. I think we're much better now.
Craig, we've been coughing because we've been a bit ill. But in fact, people also cough as a kind of discourse disfluency thing, don't they?
Yep, coughing is part of disfluency and we'll be speaking about later in the podcast. But first, we have some feedback and a voice message from our friend José Alfredo from Paraguay. And I love getting messages from all the way over on the other side of the world in countries like Paraguay. So let's listen to José.
Hello, Reza and Craig. My name is José, and I am from Paraguay, a country which is located in South America. Have you ever heard about it? Thank you very much for this podcast. I am learning a lot. I can't stop listening to it when I am driving. I used to listen to music or to a sport program on the radio of my car, but I don't do that anymore since I found this podcast. Thank you again, and goodbye.
Oh, thank you very much for your message, José Alfredo. It's very nice to hear from you. And he also told me in an email that there are two official languages in Paraguay, which I didn't know. Did you know this, Reza? Jopara is a mixture of Guarani and Espanol.
I had heard of Guarani. Yeah, but you know how that is from my appreciation of Trio Los Paraguayos.
Ah, right, that's where it's from.
Of which I'm a big fan, because most of their songs are in Spanish, but they have one or two in Guarani, and that is how I've heard of it.
Does it sound like Spanish?
No, not really.
Completely different, yeah?
Yeah.
So it's a native language?
Yeah. Okay. Totally different.
Interesting. Thanks again for your message, José Alfredo. We also received an email from Tanya, who lives in Valencia. And I'll just read it for you. It's in English. Tanya says, I'm writing to you because I heard the message in episode 158 from Alba. And that message was about a website and podcast run by Alex Perdel, whose website is crecereningles.com. And the podcast is called Aventura Bilingüe. And this is about talking to your babies in English at a very young age. And Tanya says that she thinks maybe we would find her project interesting because that's exactly what she does. She says, I've been working in Valencia for the last 2 years on this project and I'd like to share it with the rest of your listeners. Now, Tanya is an English teacher who wanted to raise her child bilingual, so speaking Spanish and English, and she thinks that children begin learning English too late and that parents should be introducing their children to English from 0 to 3 years old. So as soon as the baby is born, they should be exposed to the second language. And she says this is the critical period for language acquisition, which is actually true if you think about it, because that's when babies start to learn their first language. But the question is, do you think, Reza, it's too young to start exposing children to two languages? Do you have?
No, I don't. I don't at all. I completely agree with Tanya. And in fact, I can tell you from my own personal point of view, I really regret not having been brought up as criado bilingually. Mm-hmm. Because my father was born in India, where as a child and teenager, he spoke English and Punjabi.
And was he exposed to those two languages equally from birth?
If anything, he spoke more Punjabi. So Punjabi was really his first language. And the thing is, then he emigrated when he was quite young, about 17 years old, to the UK and stayed there the rest of his life. But when his children were born, he never spoke to any of us in Punjabi. And as a result, we don't know it. And I so wish that he had spoken to us as babies from birth, from 0 to 3 years old in Punjabi. Even if he didn't give us any books to read or anything like that, if he had just spoken in the language, I think I would have picked it up really easily. And it's a really big regret in my life that he didn't do that. Because the thinking was, when I was born in the 1970s, that it was a bad idea to do that. The thinking was that you shouldn't confuse kids, all these languages, they won't be able to speak any correctly. But we now know that that's not true.
It's been proven, hasn't it, that that's not true, that it's actually better to expose them to two languages from birth.
Even three, if you like. At the beginning, they're a bit confused, but they soon sort it out. Kids realize, now my dad's speaking Punjabi, now someone's speaking English, now someone's speaking Spanish. They figure it out quick.
And I have friends that are a mix, for example, maybe a Spanish husband and an English wife, or an English wife and a Spanish husband, and they expose their children to the two languages. Now, the children will speak one language only, probably Spanish, because they're living in Spain, but they understand everything in English. And at a particular age, there'll be this switch, and this fluent English will come out automatically, because it's there, because they understand it and they can speak it. So if you're interested to learn more, Tanya's project is called English for Families. And she says that the parents don't need to have a very good level of English, because she helps the parents with the difficulties that they have about grammar, pronunciation during the monthly meetings. So this is something that Tanya's doing, and I'm pretty sure it's a business, so you have to pay for this. She teaches daily routines. She shows you games and songs and activities so that the parents can use them during the month at home with their kids. So Tanya doesn't actually teach English to the babies, but the parents do. So if this is something you're interested in, if you have very young children or you're about to give birth and have a baby, go to English for Families. That's the number four, englishforfamilies.es. There's a link to this in the show notes at inglespodcast.com/172. And to repeat, this is, I think, a paid service, a business that Tanya has, and they are not a sponsor of this podcast, but I just thought to mention this because I think it's very useful if you have children to know about these services that you can use to bring up your children bilingual. Next, we have a voice message from Miren.
Hi, Craig. Hi, Reza. This is Miren. I was hanging out in Evox listening to a variety of audios when I came across this podcast just by chance in July. I got hooked on them from the very first minute, and must say that I've become a new alcoholic, as someone else pointed out. It's great fun listening to you, as well as extremely instructive and helpful, at least for me. I'm nearly 60, and even if in my early 20s I spoke rather good English, it's almost 30 years that I haven't spent more than 10 days in an English-spoken country, so my fluency has declined a lot, and the correct pronunciation of some words is almost impossible for me. I can hear the sound into my head, but already have forgotten how to place the tongue and the lips so that words don't come out smoothly. Some of them have become a mouthful for me. I must say, it's kind of frustrating hearing to both of you speaking so easily with such a clear pronunciation. Anyway, I walk each day for an hour by the seaside, and it's the perfect moment for me to put on my earphones, listen to La Mansión del Inglés podcasts, and repeat loudly some words and sentences you say. I can tell you without any doubt that my English has improved. So I want to personally thank you for the work you do helping us to take our English to the next level.
Well, Miren, thanks very much for your message. That's very, very kind. And we're delighted to hear you're an error. That's A-I-R-C, an error-caholic.
Alcoholic, yeah.
A fan of A-I-R-C, up in there in English, come and say, Craig.
Thanks very much, Miren.
And you said that you listened to La Mansión del Inglés, walking along the beach. Well, be careful, and you speak out the words loudly sometimes. And people might think that you're actually an alcoholic if you do that. If you walk along the beach suddenly going, oh, banana, oh, hello, oh, what a lovely day. People might think you're an alcoholic. We hope that doesn't happen to you. So best not to carry any bottles with you when you do that.
We have heard stories of listeners speaking on the train, on the bus, or laughing to themselves or repeating. And you do get some strange looks sometimes if you're repeating, but it's a good idea. It's a very good idea to repeat some of the words and expressions that we use as you're listening, and that will improve your pronunciation and help you to remember. One or two phrasal verbs that Miren used in her message that I really, really liked. For example, she said, I was hanging out in Evox. Evox, if you don't know, is like iTunes for Spanish speakers. Evox.com is a way that you can listen to our podcast. And she said she was hanging out in Evox. So to hang out is pasar un rato. So you can hang out with friends. You can hang out on the internet. You can hang out in an application. You can just be there passing the time. And she was hanging out when she came across, which is another nice phrasal verb that Miren used. To come across something is to find it by accident. So she was looking around and she came across our podcast, and then she got hooked on it. Another nice phrasal verb, to be hooked on something is enganchado. So she was hooked on the podcast. Very nice expressions there, Miren. Anything else, Reza?
Yes, I think you were very hard on yourself, Miren, about your pronunciation and fluency. I thought you were really excellent.
Yeah.
Very, very good. You sound to me like a person who regularly speaks English. You don't sound rusty, you know, oxidado. You don't sound rusty at all to me.
And very good pronunciation.
Very, very good. I just noticed one mistake, which isn't a big mistake, but it's quite common with Spanish speakers. You said something like, it's been 30 years since I haven't spent time in an English-speaking country or something like that. Negative, you said haven't. In fact, in English, that should be positive. We say it's 30 years since I have spent time, not haven't. That's a typical Spanish mistake. It's got to be positive, since I've spent time in English. But that was the only slight, tiny little mistake I noticed, to be honest.
Yep, it's very, very, very fluent. And another expression I really liked was, she said, some words are a bit of a mouthful for me. So if something is a mouthful, it's your mouth is full with it. And if words are a mouthful, it's a bit difficult to say them. So it's difficult to get your mouth around the words. And I really like that very colloquial expression, to be a bit of a mouthful.
Craig, do you find any Spanish words a bit of a mouthful?
Yeah, there are many. There was one before. We were speaking before. What was the Spanish word I couldn't pronounce? Ah, dehydration.
Yes.
What's the word in Spanish for dehydration?
Deshidratación. Deshidratación.
Deshidratación.
It's
a bit of a mouthful, as Miren says. Yeah, deshidratación.
Can I show off? Show off is show what I know, say, aparentar. It took me a long time to learn it, the mouthful. Otorrinolaringólogo. I'm really proud of that.
Wow. Otorringo?
Otorrinolaringólogo.
Otorrinolaringólogo.
It's a mouthful, isn't it?
Sounds like a city in Wales.
Yeah. It's an ear, nose, and throat specialist.
How do you say it?
Otorrinolaringólogo.
Otorrinolaringólogo.
It's a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a bit of a mouthful, yeah.
Mind you, it's a bit of a mouthful in English as well. An ear, nose and throat specialist. You have to say all of that in English.
Speaking of improving your English, we would like to recommend our lovely new sponsors, Spoken, who are sponsoring our podcast. Now, what is Spoken? Spoken is a way to improve your English using your favorite messenger app. So do you use Facebook Messenger? Do you use WhatsApp? Whatever is usually in your pocket and on your phone, Spoken will help you improve your English by creating a specific lesson plan that your private teacher will then work with you on to improve your business English, your travel English, your professional English, and help take it to the next level. So if you would like to know more about Spoken service, go and contact the wonderful people over there, Henry and all his teachers, and you can find them at inglespodcast.com/spoken. That's S-P-O-K-E-N. And for listeners of this podcast, Spoken are offering 2 free lessons when you sign up and 20% discount from your first month. So go over there and try them. We really recommend them. And we thank Spoken for sponsoring Aprender Inglés con Reza y Craig. So moving on to what are disfluencies, Reza? What are disfluencies, sometimes called filler words or discourse particles? That sounds a bit literate and a bit highbrow and very linguistic. Discourse particles, what are they?
It sounds like that, but in fact, it's something very basic, which we all do every day, I would imagine, in all languages. Mm-hmm. In English, it's saying things like, things like that, or some words like, you know, like, that don't really have any meaning. It may be because you're nervous and you can't think what to say. It may be because you want to slow down and give your brain time to think before you say the next thing. Or it may be because you're looking for an exact word and you can't quite find it. And in the meantime, you say, type of thing. Mm-hmm. So you do the same in Spanish. You do the same. But strangely, the noises are a bit different.
Yep. And it's also when you restart a sentence. So that's when you restart the sentence. I just did it there. So you start and you just repeat the first word or 2 words of the sentence. So you start and then you repeat the beginning of the sentence. Or you repeat words. So it's when you repeat a word. So it's when you do that. Yep, just repeating it.
Craig, have you found yourself doing that in Spanish?
Yes, I do. But I think I use different sounds and different words. I definitely repeat words in Spanish while I'm thinking of what comes next. Definitely. Yeah.
A very common thing that Spanish speakers do in Spain, I'm not sure about in other countries so much, is to say es que. And I've noticed I do it. Imagine, for example, something very funny happens and you want to laugh at something. You say, es que it is ideal, for example. Yep. And you repeat es que. It's a very common one, isn't it?
It's exactly the same because you use that as like a filler. Llenar el hueco is you're filling the space while you're thinking of what to say next. Yeah. Or it could just be a silent pause. So you're speaking, you're explaining, and suddenly you stop.
What was that sound in the background, by the way? That wasn't me or Craig. There's a very we might have a ghost here where we're recording.
Maybe it's a disfluency ghost.
Yeah. And it could also be to give dramatic effect. Imagine you want to call somebody stupid in Spanish. You say, es que eres idiota.
Yeah.
And the same thing is, you're a fool. So you pause to give it the dramatic effect.
But you would do that on purpose, though, wouldn't you? You would pause on purpose to give what's coming next an effect. I think a disfluency, when it's a pause, is just because you don't know what to say. So you're thinking and you pause. Another possible disfluency is to make the vowel sound very long. So in the words you say, you would make it longer, which you also do in Spanish, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
For example, when somebody asks you a question and you're giving an answer, but you're not quite sure about the answer. For example, I ask someone, would you like to come with me for a long walk? And that person's feeling a bit tired, so they say, yes. Okay. And that long E is implying like I'm not 100% sure about this.
I suppose I could. Yeah, you can also repeat syllables. So it can happen occasionally. I mean, sometimes like that. So you'd repeat a syllable and then say the word, which is... If someone does it repeatedly because it's a speech defect, so there's something not constant with their speech, you call it in English a stutter or a stammer, especially with those consonants at the beginning of stutter or stammer. I don't know what that is in Spanish.
I know, tartamudear.
Tartamudear. So, yeah, stutter or stammer.
Of course, sometimes stuttering or stammering is used on purpose for comic effect. So actors will pretend, that means fingir, not pretender, false friend, fingir. They'll pretend to have a stutter, but in fact they don't. And the reason is that you think that maybe a dirty word, a swear word, una palabrota, mm-hmm. is going to come next. And there's the pause, there's the expectation, the repetition. But then you hear a different word instead. And that's kind of that's why it's funny.
Can you think of an example in Spanish?
Well, in Spanish, I love the one that it is hijo de la Gran Bretaña. I've always liked that because hijo de la Gran, people are expecting another word. And I love it when they say Bretaña. Or sometimes just with a slight pause in the middle of a word, you can change the dirty version for the clean version. For example, eres gilipuertas, you can
yep.
say.
Instead
of the other type of gili, which is a little bit bad. So you kind of pause in the middle.
So as Reza said, these disfluencies and stuttering and repeating and silent pauses, they're all used to give our brains a chance to plan what we're going to say. And then we say it. So we usually plan and then we speak and then we plan and then we speak again. And this planning and speaking and planning and speaking in the brain causes us to produce these disfluencies. Your brain is constantly making decisions on what you're going to say next. But do you think they're bad, Reza? Do you think people look down on them? To look down on means to look at them in a bad, negative way?
Well, personally, I don't myself, but I suppose some people might. For example, on the radio, some people don't like to hear a lot of disfluencies and pauses and repetitions. It doesn't sound nice. People get bored of having to wait to hear a sentence that could have been said a lot more quickly.
I think it's the radio that's really given us a false idea of what correct speech is. Because if you listen to the radio, especially professional stations on the BBC and Voice of America, the radio announcers and radio personalities speak perfectly. You hardly hear, you almost never hear any ums, ahs, any disfluencies as they're presenting radio, especially on BBC Radio 4, for example. So perhaps because of our perception of radio and television and newscasters and professional broadcasters, we are kind of expected not to speak with disfluencies, although it's a very, very natural thing because the brain is constantly thinking of what to say next.
I bet a lot of our listeners to the podcast have seen that film, The King's Speech. Have you seen it?
Yeah, very good film. Yeah, excellent film.
The true story of the King of the United Kingdom. in the 30s and 40s who had a terrible stammer. But of course, kings have to speak a lot in public. So he learned to overcome it, superarlo, using techniques. It seems to be, as the film demonstrated, a question of confidence above all else. Just being confident in yourself.
But didn't he have a stammer or a stutter? I mean, it was something in his speech that was, it wasn't just, as I just did then, starting a sentence and then rephrasing it or maybe pausing. He had a speech defect, right?
Yeah, but he did largely overcome it with training.
He did.
He managed to get by it.
Yep.
Not easy.
I'll put a link to that film. If you haven't seen it, I definitely recommend it. It's a very, very good film. Remember, watch it in original version. Watch it in English. And I'll put a link over in the show notes at inglespodcast.com/172. One other link I'll put in the show notes is to a site called Toastmasters.org, which is a club and a website for public speakers. Some people enjoy speaking in public, and you can actually train yourself not to use disfluencies. And Toastmasters International really disapprove, or we can say frown upon, ver con malos ojos, they frown upon disfluencies. For them, it's a negative thing. So they really, really work hard to try not to have disfluencies as they're speaking. I'll put a link in the show notes. That's at toastmasters.org. But I think we agree, don't we, that they make you sound human. We're not perfect. We do plan and speak. And so I think disfluencies, the ones that we've mentioned, are quite natural in speech. Although I do hear students speaking with too many. And that can be difficult for the listener. I think if a student of English is overusing disfluencies and speaking with two, that could be a problem when you're speaking English.
I often say to my students when they're doing exams that try to avoid too many disfluencies. There's going to be some if you're doing an exam, but just think before the words come out as much as you can. Slow down.
Yeah.
You don't have to talk quickly in an exam or in real life. Slow down. Give yourself that millisecond of extra time to think makes a big difference. You can get just the right words and cut out a lot of these features.
And also, there's nothing wrong with pause. There's nothing wrong with silence. I think sometimes we're afraid of silence. We don't like long silent pauses. I think they're okay. And they're more common in the north of Europe, in Scandinavian speech and Scandinavian countries, than they are in the southern Mediterranean countries. I think like Spanish speakers, Italian speakers, speakers of Greek, they tend to speak a lot and they don't like to leave pauses. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, it's harder sometimes to get a word in, as we say in English. To get a word in means when more than one person is speaking and the other one or the other ones want to say their part, but there's no pause, there's no break for them to say their bit. And I quite often find it hard to get a word in Spanish, particularly if it's a large group, because people speak so fluently and put in so many extra unnecessary words.
I've actually given up. I've stopped trying. When I listen to more than two or three Spanish speakers in a group and it's really, really difficult for me to join the conversation, I just sit back and listen. I've stopped trying to join the conversation because it really is difficult sometimes because there's no gap in the speech. There's no space for you to jump in and start speaking. So one way for you to avoid using disfluencies is to record yourself. Take out your phone. Most phones these days have a recording app, a recording application on the phone. Just speak into your phone, record your voice, and then play it back and notice if you are using disfluencies, if you're saying or making the vowel sounds very long, and try to avoid it. Now, we've spoken about discourse markers before, haven't we? What are some examples, Reza, of discourse markers in writing, when you write English?
Well, in written English, words like firstly, in addition, moreover, on the other hand, in conclusion, that type of thing.
So those are discourse markers in writing, in written English.
They can also be used, though, in spoken English, but in formal spoken English.
Informal spoken English.
Formal, not informally. Formal spoken English, they could be used.
There are also some discourse markers we often use in informal spoken English. What are they, Reza?
Well, you know, very common things like, so, right? Anyway, mind you. Oh,
yeah.
And what about in Spanish? Words like verdad, yeah? People say verdad. Oh, sí, o no.
Mm-hmm.
Es bueno, no?
De acuerdo.
Verdad.
Yeah.
Correcto. Have you heard that? Correcto.
Yeah.
Sometimes when someone just wants to agree with you, they say correcto.
And there are some words that are called filler words that we also use. Words like actually, basically, literally, like, etc. So they don't. These words don't actually add anything to the meaning of what we're saying, but we use them quite frequently to fill space and to fill pauses. For example, I could say, "Do you know something, Reza? Do you know something? I'm literally starving at the moment." Mm-hmm. Now, starving is very, 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 very hungry, but literally starving doesn't add anything to the meaning. Another example, basically, I can't meet you after work tonight. So what I'm saying is I can't meet you after work. Mm-hmm. What does basically add to that meaning? Nothing. It's just a filler word. It's an extra word that's in there.
And the word like can go just about anywhere in English, but it always makes you sound very informal.
Yeah, and it's very common in American English. Like Americans like use like.
You know what I mean? Like that. I mean, like,
yeah.
You go to a film, like, and then you talk, like, about the film afterwards, and you're, like, you know, hanging out with your friends.
Like. And then we went for, like, a coffee, like, and then after the coffee, we went driving in the car, like, and they really overuse that filler, like, in some American English. I tell you what, Reza, let's have a short conversation. The first conversation will be without discourse markers that we've mentioned just now. The second conversation will be with discourse markers and see if you can notice the difference and notice the extra filler discourse markers that we put into the second conversation, okay? So here's the first conversation, no discourse markers.
What are you doing this weekend?
I'm thinking of going for a beer and a pizza with Steve and Jimmy for a boys' night out. Want to come along?
Yeah, sounds great. Those boys can really drink a lot. I've got class on Saturday morning.
That's no problem. We're going out Saturday night, not Friday night. Okay, now the same conversation with discourse markers.
So, what are you doing this weekend?
Well, I'm thinking of going for a beer and a pizza with Steve and Jimmy. You know, a boys' night out kind of thing. Want to come along?
Yeah, sounds great. Mind you, those boys can really drink a lot. I mean, I've got class on Saturday morning, so I don't know.
Oh, that's no problem, actually. We're going out Saturday night, not Friday night. So I hope you noticed some of the discourse markers there. If you want to see that conversation written, go to inglespodcast.com/172.
And the second one with disfluencies and discourse marking was far more realistic. That's what you're more likely to hear between
exactly.
Two native speakers.
That's what you're definitely more likely to hear like.
but of course, don't deliberately copy that. Things like basically, they must come out naturally. If you try to put them in artificially, it'll sound really crazy.
Yeah.
It just has to come out naturally.
Yeah. But you should be aware of them. And also try noticing what are disfluencies that you use in Spanish. And also listen to the people around you, your friends and your family. Try to identify the disfluencies that they are using while they're speaking Spanish. And we'd love to hear any that you notice. Please let us know. Send us an email or a voice message, and make yourself aware of your disfluencies in English and try to reduce them, try to use them less. How do you do this? As we said before, as Reza said, slow down, take your time, use some silent pauses before you speak, record yourself on your phone, play it and listen and identify your disfluencies and try to stop them. Also, ask someone to listen to you and give you feedback. Ask them to tell you what disfluencies you're using. So now it's your turn to practice your English. Please send us a voice message. You can do that by going to speakpipe.com/Inglespodcast or send us an email to me, Craig, at inglespodcast.com.
Or to me, belfastreza@gmail.com.
Remember, if you record your voice on SpeakPipe, you only have 90 seconds, so try not to use too many disfluencies while you're recording your voice. If you'd like more detailed show notes, as usual, go to patreon.com/Inglespodcast. Reza, who are our lovely sponsors this week?
Thanks very much to Nicolet, Anna, Pedro, Manuel Garcia, Maite, Lara, Maria, Sara, Carlos, Zara, Mamen, Juan, Corey Finnerin, Mariel, Jorge, Raúl, Rafael, Manuel Tarazona, Agus Paoluki, Manuel Velázquez, Néstor García Máñez from Luces Extrañas, Juan Carlos. Thanks to all of you. And thanks very much to Rafa Bancells, who started to listen to the podcast 2 weeks ago, and he sent us a very nice iTunes review. And also our most recent sponsors, Beatriz Sánchez, José Luis Arregui, and Miren Full. Thanks very much to all of you.
Yeah, we really appreciate your support of this podcast. We also like to thank Arminda from Madrid, Alberto from Granada, and Angelica Bello from Madrid, who are helping to transcribe our past episodes. We now have full transcriptions on the website for episodes 131 to 142, and also episodes 1, 2, 3, and 4, thanks to Angelica. Also, while we're thanking Alberto, congratulations to you, Alberto Gomez. He's recently been promoted in his job and he's getting married. So that's great news. Thanks for letting us know. And congratulations on both of those.
Alberto, we excuse you if you don't listen to the podcast on your honeymoon. Don't worry. We won't get angry. We'll excuse you those couple of weeks.
What's next week, Reza?
On next week's episode, we'll be talking about British castles.
Thanks for listening, and until next week, it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later. So we'll both see you later.